Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Here's Kane in the pipe, it is going to be covered by the Saints for a touchdown!
It's your inside pass to everything Saints football.
And the kick is good!
We'll take you to places most fans never go.
Will Watts from 60!
To practice, to the sideline, to the locker room. Following every twist, turn, and touchdown of the Saints season.
That is going to be a touchdown! Taysom Hill! Taysom TD!
Welcome to Inside Black and Gold.
And that is going to be a touchdown again! And guess who? Mike Thomas!
Now, here are your hosts, Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak.
Oh, baby!
Come one, come all, and welcome in Inside Black and Gold, that is. And we have a special organized team activity edition. We're cranking it out as the Saints prepare to start hitting the practice field and we get actually ready for real, well, I guess kind of real football talk, you would say.
Kind of, almost. Yeah, it's Monday when we're recording this. The first day of Saints OTAs is Tuesday, May 23rd. So not a lot of runway between now and when OTAs actually starts. So we're not going to be spending a ton of time diving into like, oh, here's what you might see. Here's what you might see. But I do want to go over like who we expect to be there and who we don't expect to be there. Because I think this one will be it's kind of like to me like preseason games of like, okay, the first one is when you'll see the fewest amount of people. The second one is when you might see the most. And then the third one is when you might see like a different set of people missing. Right. And so that all starts tomorrow. We're also going to have interviews with Dr. David Chow, pro football doc, to go over some of the injured players that were coming back that, you know, we're going to be interested to see. And then we have an interview with Drew Brees that we got on Friday on Sports Talk that I've pared down and we're going to play for you and kind of talk about some of the things he brought up. But yeah, first things first, OTAs on Tuesday. How are you excited, Steve? It kind of feels like this is the unofficial start of it's almost like the preseason to the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, we got a little taste, obviously, with the rookie mini camp, and this will give us even more access to some of the veteran players that are now showing up for these voluntary workouts. And like you said, the thing that we'll be doing first when we get there, we do with every practice, is you start taking attendance. And finding out who's showing up for these will be important. And I think we're going to see some pretty solid numbers showing up. They usually do for the Saints, and just some of the guys, I guess, with the question is going to be due to injuries for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I feel like the ones we know who we're not going to see. Right. But the interesting part to me is there's a lot of new faces on this team this year, more so than I feel like I remember in other years. Like you'd see some turnover, but I feel like, I mean, between quarterback, wide receivers, running back, an entirely new defensive interior, right? Like Nathan Shepard and Colin Saunders is the first time we're going to see them out there. So to me, that's what tomorrow is. It's like getting used to seeing Foster Moreau in number 82 in a Saints jersey, because that's what he's going to be wearing, who I expect to see, by the way. Like, I would be surprised if Foster wasn't out there, because to me, I think he's trying to prove a point. Like, if he didn't have cancer this offseason, and I know this sounds kind of weird, but just stay with me. If he didn't have cancer and he was just signing, I think there's a chance he doesn't show up. But to me, I think it's like, no, I'm good and I'm going to prove it and I'm going to be out there. So I expect to see him. But, you know, like guys like Jamal Williams going to be really interesting. James Washington, I think he's going to be wearing 89. There's one other Brian Edwards is going to be interesting to watch. Like, there's a lot of intriguing names out there that this time last year we weren't talking about. So I do think that's going to be interesting.
You mentioned, along with array of new bodies on the roster, there's definitely going to be, you know, new position coaches to check out as well. There was some even during rookie mini camp. I was like, wait a minute, who's that now with the secondary kind of thing? So yeah, just getting used to a lot of new faces.
Yeah, Marcus Robertson, great beard.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Todd Grantham, you know, who are some other Cody Burns is back from last year. You know, Joe Woods, who is, you know, he's interesting because I feel like it's strange because last year Ryan Nielsen kind of felt like a head coach in waiting, like in training almost. Like they would send Ryan Nielsen out there and you could tell, like, even from the way he spoke to the media that he was waiting for his opportunity to advance, right? Like you could see it kind of like when you dealt with Dan Campbell, like you could always see like there was higher ambitions there. Like he would eventually be a full coordinator, head coach, whatever. I don't get that impression from Joe Woods. I feel like Joe Woods is very comfortable in the role he's in. And like, I don't say that in a negative way. I just say that in, I think for this to work, you need someone like that, right? Like I could, because if this staff stays intact for years and years and years, you are never going to be the real, the true defensive coordinator on Dennis Allen's staff, right? Like,
right.
And that's why it was doomed from the start in terms of, okay, Ryan Nielsen and Chris Richard are going to be like the second and third in command, or, you know, however you want to call it. Both of them want to be full defensive coordinators. Both of them probably want to be head coaches in the NFL someday. This wasn't the route for that. But Joe Woods, I feel like, is very much comfortable where he is. So anyway, like I think as we hear from him more, I think that the reason I have that impression will become more and more clear. It's just from what I've heard from him, he doesn't strike me as someone who's like, man, I want to be calling the plays. I want to be doing this. It's like, no, he's comfortable in his role. And I think that's helpful when you have Dennis Allen kind of leading the show. And so we're going to get to see how he operates a little bit more starting tomorrow too.
Real curious off the top of your head, do you know if Chris Richard ended up anywhere? Because I can't recall him latching on with anyone.
I haven't heard anything. I know he's in that escalator program, like the coaching escalator thing. Okay. that started, but I don't believe that he is coaching anywhere currently. I mean, I could be wrong. Maybe he latched on somewhere and it wasn't reported. Maybe he's like an analyst somewhere or like a consultant. I don't know. But he didn't land anywhere as like a coordinator or anything like that. Or like a secondary coach.
Yep. That's just curious. Obviously, the Saints definitely then moving on from him, obviously, and did not have any interest in elevating him to that sole defensive coordinator role with the team.
Well, no, because I think, again, like I think the reason that happened is because you were, even if you were the sole defensive coordinator, you are not the defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Right? It is in title only. You're not calling the plays. You are not getting the credit. But you probably will get the blame. And it's like a lot of people probably wouldn't want to be in that situation. And they didn't sign on to be in that situation, right? Both of those guys were hired by Sean Payton on Dennis Allen's staff. And you didn't know how that was all going to turn out, right? Then all of a sudden, the system is what it is. And I think that's where things got awkward. Anyway, that's not really what we came in here to talk about. But it is kind of, I think that one of the reasons the defense did not hit, I would argue, its expectations last year, like it finished below the ceiling of what you probably wanted it to be, was I don't think that group, that defensive group, kind of coalesced the way that it probably was wanted to. Whether that was due to one or more of the people in there, or people not getting the opportunities that they felt like they might have deserved, or just not feeling comfortable in that setup, I don't know. But it didn't work right. Like, at least early in the season, like things didn't look right early in the season. And so hopefully that changes. Hopefully that's not the case this year. Because like you look at some of the games that the Saints lost. And if you were getting like the defensive performance you got late in the year, in the first 6-8 weeks of the season, I think you win at least one more game, maybe two, right? You probably beat the Bengals. You probably beat the Panthers week two, right? Although that's a tough example because, you know, the Panthers scored on a fumble 6. So maybe not the Panthers, right? But, you know, who was week? You know, the Bucks, maybe that game, although they played pretty well in that game. Anyway, like I think you do need to see that. Like the Vikings game is probably the best example of a game that they probably win if the defense shows up like the defense you wanted it to be, and it was at the end of the year. So that's something to watch. But why don't we go through the players who we don't expect to see tomorrow? And so you kind of alluded to this. So guys I don't expect to see due to injury are Cesar Ruiz, obviously, dealing with that Liz Frank injury. We might see him out there, like, working with trainers. I don't think we will. Maybe the second one or the third one. I don't think this is the one where you get him out there, but who knows for sure. So we'll see. Trevor Penning dealing with the same thing. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if these guys were in the building and just not out there working. And the same could be true of Michael Thomas.
Right.
Either way, like, I don't expect to see any of them out there doing drills because of their health. And I also don't expect to see them just, like, standing on the sideline.
A guy like Kendra Miller, though, we did see him doing some work off the side for rookie minicamp. Maybe that's a situation where, obviously, he feels obligated. Like, we know, they're voluntary. But as the rookie...
Oh, he'll be there. Rookies are going to be there.
I'm just wondering if we're going to see him also on the field, or will it kind of be in the building away from our eyes kind of deal? So that's going to be interesting to see how the team works and figures that out.
I think you're looking at Rashid Shaheed from last year, right? Like, because he was in a similar boat of, he dealt with the knee injury in his final game of college. He was coming back from that. And, you know, like, he actually had something to prove. Kendra, I don't think, does. Like, he's going to make the roster. He doesn't even need it. Like, he could have the worst training camp of his life. He's still going to make the roster. Last year, Rashid was not in that case. Right. And they were still kind of holding him out for OTAs, probably full well knowing they were probably going to cut him at the end of camp regardless of how he performed. And it was just kind of like okay, it's fine. Like, this is the roadmap for you. Don't panic. Just get healthy and come back. And I think that's going to be what they try to do with Kendra. But I guarantee you he's going to be angling to get out there in some way. So I think what I would like to see, and what you probably will see, is as these OTAs go forward, you see him get a little bit more incorporated. Like, maybe he takes part in some of the individual drills and not the team drills. Kind of like we saw from Mike Thomas in camp, right? Like, he was out there from day one of training camp last year, but he wasn't a full participant until like week four even. Like, it took a while before he was just going through all the drills. And so I think that's kind of what you're going to see, is like, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw him get some individual work tomorrow specifically, because I think the team is cognizant of, like, you know, they want to like show off what they got there. So, like, maybe he wouldn't work in the second 2 days of practice when it's closed to the media, but I think they're going to want to get him out there when he's healthy.
Yeah, that's another thing to keep in consideration too. It's like, what we see Tuesday might not be the same participation on Wednesday, Thursday, obviously, and we won't know because we won't be there, kind of thing.
Yeah, right. And I feel like last year it was the final day of OTAs that we were out there for practice.
I agree, right.
This year they're giving us the first day, which is kind of interesting. I don't know if it changes that much, but, you know, I do think that it's like, there were times last year where guys would be there on day one and not be there on day three.
Yes, exactly.
But there's a chance the attendance is actually better. Because, like, I remember we would see, like, pictures, like, they'll put out a gallery of, like, oh, first day of OTAs, and you'll see this person, this person, this person. And then you go there on the Wednesday and be like, well, where's CJ Gardner-Johnson, right? I think that was the case last year.
No, it might be the case. Like, yeah, like, the Thursday session might be, like, Friday, and people are like, oh, I'm out of here. I'm not sticking around.
Well, and, you know, they're going in to get, you know, to have a meeting and sit down and, like, okay, this is what we need you to work on over the next couple weeks, the next month. And then it's like, yeah, but you don't need to be there on Friday. Take care.
Right.
This is, and I think to an extent, like, you're okay with the veterans not being there because the people you actually need to see are the young players, the new players, right? Like, these are guys you want to get work in. If you're doing 8 reps of team drills, you want to see the new guys in those team drills. You don't need to see Alvin Kamara run a, you know, a handoff. Like, you know what he looks like. You know he's going to be there anyway.
Right, give it to Eno Benjamin, please. Right, he needs
it. Give it to anybody that's not the, you know, like, anyone you have to learn something about. Anyway, going back, so there's 2 other players who got cut. It's Cy Barnett, the wide receiver out of Davenport. I don't know if he got cut because he dropped a couple passes at rookie minicamp, but he dropped multiple passes while I was watching him in that, like, 15-minute segment that we were allowed to watch, and all of a sudden he's cut. Like, it kind of feels like, you know, there's not a lot you can do to make the team, but there are some things you can do to not make the team, and I think he did it.
Yeah, it's like almost like, oh, we saw enough. You have terrible hands. We're moving on.
Like, if you can't catch it here, you're not catching it. Anyway, and then cornerback Vincent Gray, and then they did sign 4 players. So they signed defensive tackle Jack Heflin, running back Ellis Merriweather, defensive lineman Nico Lalos, who's a familiar name. We've seen him before.
Yeah.
And then defensive back Adrian Fry. They also signed James Washington, who's going to be wearing number 89, and Foster Moreau, who's wearing 82. And to go back, Heflin's going to wear 95. Merriweather's going to wear 35. Lalos is going to wear 54. And Adrian Fry is going to wear 44. So all of those guys, guarantee you, will be there. With the exception of maybe Foster, if his doctor says, you know what, maybe hold off. But like I said, I expect him to be out there.
Yeah, that whole story has been pretty amazing. And just from our standpoint, really curious to see the conditioning, his energy, and just what he's able to do on the field. Because I don't know, everyone I talk to thinks it's pretty amazing that he's able to undergo these treatments and be able to participate in football, NFL football practices already. This isn't just, you know, hanging around doing some notes on your laptop.
Yeah, see, from hearing him talk about it, I don't think it was ever really a huge issue for him in terms of, like, he said he only had like 10 days where he couldn't work out because he wasn't getting chemo or anything like that. It was a drug that, you know, he had an IV drip and then he had three shots and it went and it took care of the lymphoma he was dealing with. And I was back. And like down the road, he might need to get more treatment. But right now, it's just like, yeah, you're going. Anyway, so we talked about that. Let's talk about the players that I don't expect to be there. So like DeMario Davis, no. Marshawn Lattimore, no. Alvin Kamara, no. Those are the three that I am 100% confident will not be there.
Seeing DeMario doing whatever kind of workouts with Cam Jordan in the team's facility might have me swaying towards seeing, you know, him out there. But yeah, that obviously doesn't signify, just because they had him in a picture working at the facility, that he's going to be around for those voluntary workouts.
Well, I mean, like a lot of the players have been in the facility and like doing off-season program stuff. Like that's not unusual. He wasn't there last year. I don't anticipate him going to be there this year. The same with Marshawn, same with Alvin. I don't think Tyron's going to be there. Tyron was there last year because it was his first year on the team. And I think anyone who is new to the team is going to be there. But I don't think Tyron's going to be there this year. Marcus May as well. I wouldn't be surprised if he's not there. And then the offensive lineman, I think, is a question, right? Like Ryan Ramczyk, anyone on a rookie deal that's going to be there. Ryan Ramczyk, I think, will probably not be there. Eric McCoy, probably not there. Andres Pete, probably not there. Anyone in a position battle? Probably yes. We're like a James Hurst, who I think still is in position battle for left tackle, is probably going to be there. And it's more James Hurst competing against Trevor Penning's health than technically competing against Trevor Penning. But I think he'll be there. So like those three offensive linemen, Eric McCoy, Ryan Ramczyk, Andres Pete. And then Taysom Hill, I think I would not be surprised if he's not there either.
Yeah, I don't know if he's got much to prove. We're not talking about any kind of position change this year. Right. We know he's going to be in that utility role again. So, I know he had to deal with a groin injury early on last year. So definitely give the Swiss Army knife plenty of rest. Was that
rib injury? You're thinking Pete Warner.
Oh, Warner had the groin. That's right.
Yeah, who this time last year was working off to the side with trainers, right? Because he was dealing with that groin injury.
That's right. He had the rib pace.
Yeah, he's another guy that like he's on a rookie deal, so I expect the rookie deal guys to be there, right? Like Pete Warner, Paulson Adebo, Alante Taylor. Like you don't see those guys skip OTAs, and if they do, it's usually like think about the guy for the Giants, Florida, got traded midseason, first round pick. Gosh, I'm blanking.
The tight end?
No, wide receiver. He ended up on the Chiefs and won Super Bowl. Kadarius Toney.
Yeah, I could.
Right? Like, he skipped workouts. And immediately it was like, this is an issue. Like, and it's not because you need to be at these workouts, but when you are a rookie or a second-year player or a third-year player, it seems like it's sending a message. Just like C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Like, his whole offseason was trying to send a message like, this is not going the way I want it to go. And you could see it. It was not difficult to identify. And I think when you're a young player and you're skipping voluntary workouts, when you know it's like you are getting better, this is your development time, then it's kind of I think it's indicating something beyond like, oh, I want a weekend off. So that's something. The funny thing is I would bet money that Jameis Winston is there. It's the opposite reason of like a Taysom Hill, who if he was competing to be quarterback, to be a starting quarterback, he's there. In the role that you have him in at tight end, I don't think he is there. Whereas Jameis Winston is definitely not competing to be a starting quarterback, but just his personality is going to have him be out there. I would be very surprised if Jameis is not out there tomorrow.
No, I definitely feel the same way. The fact that, you know, we've seen him be that team first guy all along, no matter what the situation's been. And you know what? I don't think he's going to want to let his grasp of that number two role goal go, even if, you know, it's going to take a lot, obviously, for a rookie like Jake Haener to become Derek Carr's backup. But heck, anytime you're not in the building, it gives him that extra leg up. So, yeah, I would think Winston's going to be that competitor and be there right from day one for him.
It's a good point. Like, I'm not going through position battles right now because I don't think it's worth talking about until you at least get into the mini camp. But, like, one of the position battles this offseason, and it's going to be a stilted one, like, it's going to be Jameis way out ahead to start, but it's Jameis Winston and Jake Haener for the backup quarterback job is a position battle. Like, it will be very difficult for Jake Haener to win it, but it is at least in consideration, right? Like Marshawn Lattimore is not competing with anybody. Alvin Kamara is not competing with anybody. Like, there are people, like, maybe Kendre Miller and Jamal Williams for, like, some of the backup snaps, right? Like, that's possible, but, like, no one's contending with to take Alvin's job this year. No one's contending to take Chris Olave's job this year. It's a very much set, and you're just kind of seeing who develops where. But backup quarterback, you know, they paid Jameis. Like, Jameis is under contract. It wouldn't hurt to only have two quarterbacks active on game day, right? And if Jake Haener showed up and, like, was that guy and it was very clear that you could trust him from day one, maybe it's worth saving that roster spot. I don't know. But anyway, I think it's a good point.
Yeah, it just seems like obviously a huge uphill battle, and things would go dramatically wrong for Jameis Winston in camp if he were to be the number three guy, obviously.
Yeah, no, yeah, right. Like, he would have to do something crazy. Like, I think the way I described it last time, and I stick with it, it's like if you were, it'd be like running a 400, and, like, Jameis is already three turns in, and, like, the only way Jake Haener could possibly catch up would be, like, Jameis, like, trips over a ghost and falls, and, you know, like, it's like if he just got up and jogged, he probably wins still. But it's like he needs to, if he falls over and then is just lays there on the ground, like, that's the only way. Anyway, that's a kind of a long form way to describe that. But I think that's a good way to look at it, is like Jake Haener could be fantastic. It would still require Jameis to not do the job, like to just kind of like fall over on himself. I don't think that's going to happen. Anyway, we'll start to see that tomorrow. But I do, like, regardless of whether Jake, quote unquote, wins that position battle, he's still going to be a really interesting guy to watch because you want to see the progression. You want to see him get better and better. Like, I don't mind if he struggles tomorrow, right? I want to see him by the end of training camp not struggling with the same stuff he struggled with on the first day of OTAs.
Yeah, unlike our good buddy Ian Book, who we just we never saw that clock in his head get any faster.
No, I think he got worse. I think he actually regressed from, like, the times that I feel like he was better in his first offseason than he was in the second. Anyway, so yeah, let's wrap up that segment. We're gonna go in and we're gonna play you an interview that we did with Dr. David Chow, Pro Football Doc on Twitter. Check him out. Michael Thomas is not his biggest fan, but he kind of did nail Michael Thomas's outlook last year, considering played three games and then was not heard from again. So I do very much trust his opinion, even if Mike D doesn't. But we're going to come back with that. You're listening to Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Steve Geller. We got OTAs starting on Tuesday. Stick around.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
This is Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Steve Geller. And we are getting ready for OTAs starting on Tuesday. The first set of OTAs is going to be May 23rd through 25th. That's this Tuesday through Thursday. We're going to be out there on the Tuesday for all three of these sessions. That is the first practice of the three. The next one's going to be May 30th through June 1st. So that's a week from tomorrow. And Tuesday, June 5th through June 8th is the following week. And then mandatory mini camp, which would be June 13th through 15th. Then training camp is at the end of July. We kind of went through in the last segment, you know, who we expect to be out there, who we don't. One of the few people that we are very confident we won't see is due to health and injuries. And so that's why I thought this interview with David Chow, the Pro Football Doc, was interesting. You know, like, and last year, you know, he talked to us at WWL and he was, you know, I know it made Mike Thomas angry. I think he said your favorite fantasy football doctor lied to you or something along those lines. That's around the same time that he was publicly feuding with Jeff Duncan, which I still think is funny that Jeff had no idea what was happening until someone told him afterward. He just did not hear it. But, you know, I appreciate that Mike Thomas, because it at least lets me know that Mike Thomas is still engaged. And that's what you do have to wonder about with Mike, because you see him so infrequently. We don't see him. Like, once he got hurt and didn't come back, we didn't talk to him again. We talked to Alvin about Mike. We didn't talk to Mike once from week three on. So it's like, we just have to kind of wait and see. But yeah, what did you think of that interview before we play it?
No, I'm totally agreeing with you with Mike Thomas. The Saints definitely treat him with kid gloves and are very protective of, you know, putting him in front of us at all. But with Dr. Chow, I mean, you obviously respect his knowledge, having been a lead doctor for teams in the NFL and what he brings to the table here, and wasn't necessarily wrong in the information he gave us with Mike T. And I did find it obviously pretty eye-opening of what he thinks about the receiver going forward as well. And it's, you know, obviously dealing with a slew of injuries these past couple of years, it's basically we're never going to see that same Michael Thomas that we're used to on the field again, like it or not.
Yeah, and I mean, like, if you're wondering about his credentials, go look him up on Twitter, @ProFootballDoc. I mean, he was a lead NFL doctor, team doctor for 17 years. Like, he knows what he's talking about. And one thing that he's always careful about is to make it clear, like, I'm not treating these people.
Yes.
I'm not treating these athletes, but I am analyzing what their injuries are and what that means to their outlook. And so he looks at a lot of this and kind of projects it into, you know, a fantasy football sense in a lot of instances of like, okay, you're trying to figure out not only how significant this injury is in a football sense, but how long is it going to keep him out? How much is it going to affect him? Because I think that's what a lot of people don't consider as they get down toward the end of the season. Like, if you go back to that 2020 season and the Saints and the Bucs are playing in the playoffs, Michael Thomas is out there, but that's not Michael Thomas.
Right.
If Michael Thomas does not catch a pass in a football game, Michael Thomas is not on the field. And he wasn't. He was playing on one leg. And so you have to consider it a little bit more than like, oh, yeah, he can get out there. It's like, yeah, he's battling, but that's not like what percentage was he playing at? Like, in the wild card game, maybe he was like a 70. In that AFC Championship game, he might have been like a 60. And Carlton Davis is now going to use that as his like Mount Rushmore performance, that he beat Mike Thomas on one leg. Anyway, I do think like thinking about injuries in a more aggregate way of like, yes, after a certain point, it does slow you down is important as a kind of analyzing sports and kind of getting further in the season. Because like Drew Brees is another example. Like, I don't think Drew Brees was Drew Brees during that AFC Championship game. Maybe he was still good enough to potentially win that game if Jared Cook doesn't undermine everything that they were trying to do. But he was not, like, he was playing with like a torn labrum and all this, like, Brittany Brees, like, kind of threw him under, threw all of the information out there into the wild after the season ended. But yeah, it's important. And I think how you kind of assess injuries is important to when you're analyzing the game. But here is that interview that we did with David Chow on Sports Talk
Chow for giving us some time. Pro Football Doc, when we hear that about hardware being taken off of the injured foot or slash toe, what does that entail for Thomas? And when you hear Dennis Allen speaking about the recovery, just what's your take and what do you think we can expect from Thomas?
Well, of course, you know, we're looking at things from afar, and I think we talked before that when he was coming off the ankle, I was saying that Michael Thomas was more likely going to be the third receiver for the Saints than a top three receiver in the league. And obviously, last year with his injury, he was the fourth wide receiver for the Saints behind Olave, Shaheed, and then Landry. Look, I'm not that doom and gloom this time, but it is certainly concerning. It was a second toe injury. I would have felt that he should be a little further along than he is. But certainly for the head coach to say he's hoping slash expecting, look, the 49ers are hoping, right? And the other thing that Coach Allen talks about, and it's very real, 2019 is the last year that Michael Thomas finished the season and had a great season. 2020, a little less than half. 2021, zero. And last year, very few games. That's a lot of time out of the game and getting back into football shape, et cetera. What he has going for him, he's a big body receiver, so he can make some catches based on his size. But that's a high hill to climb, and we'll have to see how he looks. I mean, in the past, he's always posted a lot of videos of himself, you know, working out, and that kind of gives us some better idea of how he might be. But I can understand why people are a little bit worried right now.
Dr. Chow, thanks for coming on. I think one thing, we've heard a lot of things about toe injuries, especially this past season with the Saints, it feels like everyone's had a toe injury. Mike Thomas's is a little distinctive because he had a dislocation of that second toe. And I'm just curious if you could just give us some perspective, because I think from an outsider's kind of point of view, it's like, really a toe? How is a toe keeping you out for this long? But, you know, what are some of the challenges of dealing with that, especially for an NFL player who obviously needs to use those feet pretty well to play at this type of level?
Well, there's no question the great toe, the first toe, the big toe is way more important than any other joint.
Right.
And that's the turf toe joint and everything else. The second toe is, well, the second most important. But the great toe is at least 50% of the push-off power. And the second toe is significantly less. You know, the pinky toe you probably could, quote, chop off, so to speak, right? And the second toe is the second most important, and it can be a factor. And obviously, you hear it from Dennis Allen. I feel like I'm a really bad reporter. I happened to be in Arizona during the owner's meeting in the cocktail function and got introduced to Dennis Allen, but I didn't ask him specifically about Michael Thomas. You know, I wouldn't want to submarine him anyways. I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek. The idea is that coaches are always going to be hope springs eternal right now, right? Everyone says whatever. But here's the thing. Okay, let me ask you this question. Who would you guys at this point have more faith in? Odell Beckham Jr. with the Ravens or Michael Thomas with the Saints? They've both had their injury issues, and I think you can make a case either way. I know nationally there was a line put out on Odell Beckham futures prop that was at 575 or something like that. Not super optimistic for Odell Beckham because it was his second ACL. But then again, he's had a year and a half to recover from it, whereas Michael Thomas has been, you know, three seasons now with a variety of injuries and not ready to go. Odell Beckham's going to be full go for a training camp and full go for OTAs. Michael Thomas isn't. So, yeah, I think there's some reason to have some concern. No reason to panic. We'll have to see how he does and turns around, and I'm sure he'll post his videos about how he's moving and running, and then we'll judge from there.
You know, I think it's a good question with the difference between Odell Beckham and Mike Thomas, and it's one of the reasons I felt a little bit more optimistic last year probably than I should have been, in that Mike is a bigger receiver. He's never really used athleticism as a crutch to get open in the NFL. He's the king of the contested catch. Whereas Odell, I think you probably do need that dynamic athleticism at his size to be effective. But, you know, then you watch it in action, you get through three games, and it's just, you know, one thing after another. And I guess I wonder, when you do have those repetitive lower body injuries,
is it just bad luck at this point, or does it point to, you know, some structural issues, or, you know, you're compensating in one way and it leads to more injuries? Does one thing lead to another, or is it more likely just like, hey, he's just been snake bit?
Well, usually the truth is somewhere in between, right? Yeah. There's probably a snake bit component, but certainly in the kinetic chain, as we call it, one injury can lead to another in terms of compensation. And, you know, these guys are race cars, Indy cars. They rev at very high levels to perform, you know, and you're right about he's lifting 500 plus pounds, but that's not the game of football. That's not what he has to do to run, jump, and move. And you are right, being a big body receiver, you know, that doesn't go away, you know, his being a big body receiver. So he's not like, a smaller receiver that really relies purely on separation to get open and make catches. And that's what he does have going in his favor.
And there it is. If you want to listen to that full interview, you can go over to WWL and check that out. But yeah, I do think that he makes some interesting points there. And I think it is worth mentioning that he is more optimistic this year than he was last year. And I think part of that is, for Mike Thomas, you're at least not coming back from the ankle, right? Like, what last year at this time, it was like, man, is his ankle ever going to allow him to play at the level that you remember Mike Thomas, which is 2019, the 149 catches, or was it 149? I think it was. And that's not what he's coming back from this year. It's the toe, it's the foot, but it's not that ankle where it's like Steph Curry. If you want to go back early in Steph Curry's career, you know, not only were you not sure whether he could win championships or do whatever he's done, you weren't even sure he could make it through a season. He had glass ankles. They just kept getting hurt and hurt, and he eventually kind of adjusted his footwear, and I'm sure he worked a lot to strengthen those ankles, and he ended up being obviously the Steph Curry that everyone knows. But that was a serious question. It was not like just, you know, oh, people going crazy on the internet. It was a serious question because he just kept having seasons significantly impacted by ankle injuries. And for me, that is the one difference this year for Mike T, is you at least are not questioning the ankle. Now, the toe, the foot, can his feet hold up? It's a whole different question. But I think it is a much lower hurdle to try to get past.
Yeah, Dr. Chow did mention that he's a little concerned with the fact that he thinks the toe recovery might be taking a little longer than expected, but I'm sure that just everybody being extra careful just due to the history we've seen Michael Thomas go through with that ankle that you were just talking about kind of thing. But man, yeah, when he was back on the field last year, those three games, it looked like the old Mike T again, and that's definitely encouraging at least.
And the ankle was never an issue, right? Like that's the thing, is what people need to remember. He hasn't missed basically three seasons due to
the same
a variety of injuries. It has been ankle surgery, setback on the ankle surgery, this. This is different. So like at least there is that. And it's a small, you know, the thing to pull out of it. But I do think that it's significant. And I don't like... From my understanding is like, this is the timeline that they had set. It's not like they're set back in any way. And like, he was supposed to be ready at this point and he's not. Like, this is the schedule playing out where he had some hardware in his foot. That's what you referenced at the beginning of that interview. It got taken out recently. And so that's obviously a surgery. It's a minor surgery, but it is still a surgery. So it takes some time to recover from. And I wouldn't be surprised if that was one of the last steps to getting that ramp up that I'm sure we're going to hear a lot about. But, you know, I again, it's like, I don't question whether he can be out there for camp. And I don't think that the timeline that you're dealing with right now is an issue in any way, just like it wasn't last year. It's like, we're going to talk about it all through camp. We're going to say Mike Thomas looks great, but the question is not going to be answered until you get into the regular season and he can play. What, how many games in a row, right? Like, how many games can you, like, I would be fine if he played three out of every four games, right? Like that three game stretch last year, great. Week four, he's out, fine. But he needs to be back week five and then play week six and week seven. Week eight, fine, take it off, you're fine. Week 9, 10, 11, you should be out there, right? Like, I would be fine with that. I would be very fine with that because I think it would portend for a team to make the playoffs. And then it's like, okay, I don't care how much you play in the second half of the season, as long as you're there for the playoffs, right? It's just, it's like the last few seasons from an offensive perspective have been very much like watching a team with like one hand tied behind its back.
Yeah.
And I just hope that changes.
Yeah. And Mike T, the notion that he's, you know, holding out or he doesn't want to play for the team, I hope we're beyond that with some of the chatter on social media and all. If there's anybody that wants to be out there, you know, the way Michael Thomas works, the way he's dedicated to his craft, to getting his body in tune. We saw him doing that crazy deadlifting amount of weight, and the strength has never been a problem. We love the fact that he's able to get those contested catches. We just need the man's lower body, lower extremities, that ankle and foot to stay healthy for the season. And I would think we're all good. Of course, something else could happen. I don't want to jinx anything, but man, if we could just get Michael Thomas's feet in the right order, we should be good with him for this season. And yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it just because, like you said, he's going to look amazing. We're going to talk about, oh my God, how we just burned Marshawn Lattimore on a route.
Yeah. Maybe they should just replace like all of his toes with like bionic toes.
Whatever works, right. Sure.
You know, and it's funny because like at this point, I don't even care about that conversation of like, oh, he doesn't want to be here, whatever. He would much rather be playing somewhere else. Like, you can have that conversation. It doesn't matter whether he does want to play somewhere else or he doesn't. If he wanted to play somewhere else, he could have gone and done that this offseason.
Amen, right.
So either he does want to, and there's no deal out there for him, which means that he doesn't have a choice anyway, or he doesn't want to, and it doesn't matter. So, like, I don't really care about that argument. It doesn't matter either way. Next offseason, fine. If he doesn't want to be here, he can go hunt for a deal somewhere else. But that deal is not going to exist unless he plays well for the Saints this year. So, like, I have no question whether he's going to go out there and give full effort. The only question is whether he physically can do it. And it's been the same question for the last 3 years. And I don't think it has anything to do with motivation or try hard. It's all about just, you know, I hope it's luck, right? Like, that's the problem is like after a certain amount of times, it's just what happens. And, you know, it's no longer luck. But yeah. And he's not the only injured player, but it's just every year it's going to be the same conversation until he's no longer on the team.
You mentioned the fact that if he could have, he would have went somewhere else kind of thing. And I'll just go circle back to also when Derek Carr was signed, you know, the tweet with the praying hands together and saying, thank you, Jesus. So that to
me, wants to be here.
He wants to be here. And he's really looking forward. It seems to be working with Derek Carr. So I think Saints fans should be excited about that notion.
And I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he did kick the tires and see if there were any deals out there. That's what your agent's there for, right? But I don't think that process went very far. I mean, like, he didn't drag it out, right? Like, that his restructure and his renegotiated deal got done way earlier than it had to get done. So, like, what, regardless of how aggressively he pursued leaving, if he did at all, it didn't last very long.
Yeah, and just, I mean, he's got to realize, too, that as good and as dominating as he once was, it just, that hasn't been the case, unfortunately, for the last 2 years.
Except for week one. He was good in week one. But yeah, he's not the only injured player. Like Trevor Penning, Cesar Ruiz, it's going to be a question too. Kendra Miller, I genuinely think that Kendra could go out there and play and it's completely fine. And it's just a matter of the team playing it safe. Like if this was college, he would be there. He'd be on the field.
Knock on wood. I'm trying to think about defense and I can't really think of anybody that's we're you know, nursing an injury coming back from at least.
No, last year you had Marcus Davenport and Pete Werner, who were both kind of working off to the side, and Marcus May. He was coming back from the Achilles. So, yeah, last year you had three key defensive players, three starters, all dealing with injuries to start camp. And right now, fingers crossed, that is right. Not the case for anybody. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, I guess the only one you worry about coming in and who needs to have that productive, I'm not going to even say a breakout year, just have a productive season is, you know, former first round pick and Peyton Turner, who we've seen have a list of injuries already.
But I mean, like he's been healthy in camp.
Right.
So I don't even know. Like I thought he looked good last camp. That's the thing that kind of really surprised me is like, I thought he had a good camp. I thought he looked good. I thought he looked like he had improved from year one. He was fighting with Trevor Penning, right? It was competitive.
Yeah.
And then you get to the regular season and he's just nowhere to be found. And I don't know if part of that is just being stuck in a rotation behind Marcus Davenport, right? Like maybe with more kind of first team reps, he can build on that. But, you know, it's got to be there and you got to see it. But again, like I thought that he looked like much improved during camp, and maybe it was a mirage. Maybe it's just, you know, that season just didn't go the way he had hoped. I don't know. Week two, you're already a healthy scratch. We'll see.
Yeah. But, yeah. I thought that was interesting too. I agree with you. Turner looked like he was doing a lot of good things, but I just remember that Coach Dennis Allen was definitely very hesitant to praise anything. And there were still, you know, well, we got to see more. It's still kind of that work in progress kind of thing.
Yeah. And it was the exact opposite for like a Juwan Johnson, who was getting all the praise in the world. And it was like, yeah, they're going to re-sign this guy and they're going to extend him. And he's going to be a major part of the offense. And he was. So, yeah, and at the same time, everyone was heaping praise on Dejon Dixon, and Dennis was like, yeah, he needs to be better on special teams. And then he got cut. Right. So it's not always what you see. It's kind of what you don't see, too. And that's why those interviews are actually, you know, valuable, because, you know, it's like it doesn't even matter what I think. It matters what the coaches think, right?
Yeah, they're the ones that matter. It's crazy. They don't listen to us media members, right?
Sometimes I wonder if they do, and then I'm like, no, they don't. Of course not. Why would they? Although they keep drafting the players that I say they're going to draft, so maybe they are listening to my mock drafts.
You definitely got the pipeline. This year was definitely you and Jeff Ireland's fingerprints all over that draft.
Yeah. Next year, you're going to be like, man, we always get these picks wrong. I'm like, no, I don't. anyway, all right. Let's wrap up that segment. We're going to come back. We're going to play you an interview with Drew Brees. Also from last week on Sports Talk, he got into a lot of really interesting things, and he had some very glowing comments to say about Taysom Hill, which I know Taysom Hill is always a fun conversation to be had in the Saints family. So we'll kind of talk about that. So stick around on Inside Black.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back on Inside Black and Gold. One more segment. I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Steve Gell. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do that. Please hit the subscribe button wherever you listen to your podcast. Please or give a like, whatever it is. Rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. And this interview is 10 minutes long. This is Drew Brees. I am not part of it. It is actually Steve and Bobby from Sports Talk. I'm just going to go right into it. For fair warning, if you are subscribed on YouTube, we did post this interview on YouTube. It's about 10 minutes long. So if you'd rather just skip, if you've heard it already and listen to our takes on it at the end, scrub about 10 minutes forward and you'll be there. But without further ado, here is that interview with the GOAT himself, Sir Drew, Mr. Brees. There you go.
Now, Drew, damn, it's the easiest schedule they ever had in history. It's like, oh, my God, how can you not win double digits? I know things change and who you play and you look at the quarterback matchups, but I look at how can you not hold the organization's feet to the fire, that being Dennis Allen. Look, I'm a Dennis Allen, Mickey Loomis fan. But I look right now, the team's right on the 500 bubble. I'll say for like 8-9, 9-8, hell yeah, we should be double digits. We cannot afford to have the third consecutive losing campaign. Now, I don't know if you're going to win anything, but you should be in the hunt potentially to win the NFC South. And have double-digit wins for sure, considering that we're at right now with Derek Carr at the helm.
I've never seen him this excited over a schedule, Drew.
Yeah, I see that. I feel it. You know, it's funny. There are plenty of times where I looked at the schedule and was like, man, this is gonna be the toughest schedule we've ever played. Like, look, we got to go here, we got to go there, this time of year, that time of year, whatever. At the end of the day, you really don't know. You really don't know what you're going to encounter, you know, from week to week with these teams. You know, on paper right now, some of them may look really, really good. Some of them may look really bad. You really don't know until you get to that point.
Right.
There's so many variables and circumstances that go into that, right? Not just them, but how you are as a team, right? How you're coming together. If you have some key injuries and you're just having to battle it out for a few weeks with some guys that are less proven. Look, at the end of the day, like, look at the division, you know. Should we win the division?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Win the division. But Atlanta will be better than they were last year. Carolina will be better than they were last year. Tampa, I don't know, maybe not. Bottom line is this, you know, if you look at last year, we should have won the division last year.
I agree.
If we beat Tampa in Tampa on Monday night, would your impression of where the team sits be different had we won the division last year?
That's true.
Right? I think everybody would have maybe a little bit different feeling of a sense of urgency, but you know, you start feeling like, man, we really gotta do something here, right? It's been two seasons now without going to the playoffs, when obviously that's the expectation that we've established. But we were one game away, not even one game, we're like two plays away.
Right.
In that game. There's about five things that if just one of them didn't happen at the end of that game, we win the division, right? We're right there. I mean, bottom line is we're right there. We have all the pieces in place. I mean, offensively, golly. Like, I look at the skill position and just we've got a lot of mouths to feed. But, man, we've got guys that if we can – everyone understands and embraces their role. I think Derek Carr is a great fit for the system. I think defensively we're still there. You know, I mean, you'd say the two captains of the defense, Cam Jordan and DeMario, are in a position with some young talent now around them that we've gone out and drafted over the last 2 years. You got to make sure that we can hold up front. You know, you lose a couple interior D linemen, but you go and draft a couple. You know, hopefully those guys jump right into a position where they're key contributors and everybody can stay healthy. I mean, look, yeah, sky's the limit. You know, you just want to take one step at a time. But I don't think you worry so much about who you're playing or the rest of the division or any of that other stuff, though, Bobby. You just focus on, honestly, the best teams that I was a part of here.
On yourself, right?
We're teams that just, honestly, the off seasons, the training camps, you just battled. Iron sharpens iron. Like, you woke up every day trying to kick the other side's ass.
Amen.
Like you woke up and it was like, I couldn't even look at Jonathan Vilma in the locker room because I was like, I got to kick that guy's ass today.
Like
you know,
that.
All those guys, Roman, Malcolm, like all those guys, you know?
Amen.
And so for a month, you were just at each other's throats. And then once you got to the season, like, you were so tired of beating up on each other that you couldn't wait for the season to start. And then you looked at everybody else and you said, there's no way that who we're about to play this Sunday is better than what we've been going up against every day in practice for the last month. And it just made the season that much easier.
Now, Drew, but the question I should say that I have for you, we can't be snake bit again as far as, can we take away the football or protect it? Drew, I bet you didn't know this. I'm going to tell you this. Do you know that the Saints are coming off their worst team ever, the worst season ever in Saints history for takeaways? And only 14 forced turnovers and 7 interceptions that were both franchise lows. Considering as good as our secondary was, that's two franchise lows. Well, you know this. Okay, let's say we've played a handful of games. Can we be +4 instead of -4 or something? I mean, you know how much difference that makes.
Yeah. Look, and there's a lot of things that go into that. But you talk about, man, ways to help the offense, right, and play complementary ball. You know, that goes a long way. On the flip side, the better the offense is, the more points you're scoring, the more pressure you put on the opposing offense
right.
to have to be more aggressive. Well, what happens when they get more aggressive? That's when the defense can be opportunistic. So all these things play hand in hand, right? And it's not that one equals the other, and it's a combination of all these things. Man, the better the offense plays, I guarantee you, the more turnovers the defense will get. And the more turnovers the defense gets, the more points the offense will get because of the more opportunities and the more momentum shifts, right? These things work hand in hand. Both sides have their responsibility in that.
Have you got a chance at all to talk to Saints rookie Jake Haener after he got drafted by the team in the fourth round? Huge fan of yours, wore the number 9 in college, and just seems to have that same kind of moxie, that attitude and that makeup.
Well, he's a poor man's Drew Brees waiting to accomplish great things. That's what I think.
Yeah, I had a chance to be around him this offseason, and he communicated a little bit of how he followed me growing up, but not to the extent of what's come out since the draft. So obviously that's humbling. I think it's a great pickup for the Saints. I think he brings a lot, and look, you hope that Derek Carr can stay healthy and everything goes great, but as we know in the NFL, you need a very, very capable backup, kind of stable of guys that can step in and get the job done if they need to, certainly Taysom Hill is always ready, willing and able in whatever capacity, the team needs him. But yeah, that's always exciting to get guys like that, to hear stories like that and feel like, you've made that type of impact on a young player, young QB.
Now, Drew, you bring up Taysom Hill. I said there should be a category for him, I don't know, in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Not a regionalized Hall of Fame, but, I mean, talk about jack of all trades, Swiss Army knife. I mean, have you ever witnessed a quarterback that can run past you or run over you and then is capable to do some play-action passes and then also block a punt or return a kickoff? I mean, he's like the modern-day version of Jim Thorpe. I mean, can you name another NFL player that's playing in the 21st century or even before that who's on the Taysom Hill level?
I've never seen a player like Taysom Hill, ever. Maybe there was a throwback guy, right, in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, right, that we're not thinking about, Otto Graham or so, I don't know. But I don't think we've ever witnessed anything like this before. A guy who could, if someone decided to build an offense around him, he could play quarterback in the NFL. Okay? Look, that job is hard enough, right? But now couple that with the fact that he's returned punts, he's returned kickoffs, he's blocked punts, he's blocked extra points, he can block the point of attack in the run game, he can pass protect, he catches touchdowns. He can run the football as well as just about any running back you have. I mean, so it's not just one or the other. It's the combination of all these things. If all of a sudden you were down an offensive lineman and you said, Taysom, would you just play guard for like 3 plays and just like hold up against this stud inside?
Right, right.
I bet you he could do it.
Right.
He'd certainly stick his nose in there and try. So yeah, I mean, I've never seen anything like the guy, and he's as good a teammate as I've ever had too, which makes it even better.
Drew, definitely appreciate the time. Please tell us more about the Pickleball Fest that is headed our way to NOLA, and any message out to all those sports and pickleball fans here in New Orleans.
Absolutely. Pickleballers everywhere, New Orleans, nationwide, sign up. We'd love to have you. Again, the dates are August 10th through the 13th in New Orleans at the Convention Center. Be tons of events in and around the amateur pickleball tournament itself. There'll be pros, there'll be celebs. So celebrity pro-ams, we're going to have food, concert, music, you name it. It'll be a ton of fun. And you can go to drewbrees.com, which is our foundation website, because all the proceeds go to our foundation. And you can click on the link there to register. Also, sponsorship opportunities. If you want your company to be involved, we're going to have a whole VIP experience aspect alongside this, a huge hospitality aspect in true New Orleans fashion. So the NOLA Pickle Fest is what we're calling it. So the first annual New Orleans Pickleball Fest, August 10th through 13th, drewbrees.com.
All right, and there it is. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Drew, for coming on the Sports Talk last week. I thought it was a really good interview. There is a little bit more to that. If you'd like to hear the whole interview, you can go check it out on WWL.
For all you pickleball fans.
Big pickleball fans. He's bringing a pickleball fest. Pickleball. Pickleball, pickleball, pickleball.
We're going to have to try and get some kind of WWL team together and see if Drew will play us.
Well, I've been, you know, this is not about the football at all, but I've been seeing like news stories about how people who own houses near pickleball courts are like going insane because the noise is,
I did
like,
see that.
Just so obnoxious. It's like, cause it's like tennis. It's like, a tennis ball hitting a tennis racket. It's not really noise, but it'd be like living next to a giant ping pong table.
Yes.
With people playing all the time. And I can see why it'd be annoying because that noise, like you can kind of hear it in your head. It's just like, thunk.
I get annoyed when we're in the locker room and I hear it on my audio when I'm editing stuff.
Like ping pong?
Oh, yeah, because they're always in there doing that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't think they've had a ping pong table in there for a while.
Yeah, now it's just the basketball going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, you definitely that. And yeah. It basically is a big wiffle ball you're hitting around. And it's funny you mentioned that. I saw that same thing there's residential folks are getting aggravated with the noise from pickleball.
Because it's not loud, but it's loud enough and it's repetitive.
And constant, right.
It'd be like if someone was constantly playing wiffle ball next to your house, but all they were doing was constantly hitting 100 wiffle balls back to back to back to back to back. Yeah. Anyway, so no, I thought Drew had a lot of interesting things to say in that interview. One of them, as mentioned previously, we already know that Drew Brees really likes Taysom Hill. But when you say something like, I have never seen a player like Taysom Hill ever, I think that's pretty telling. And like, I still get asked, like, why does Taysom Hill have a spot on this roster? What does he do? And the answer is everything that nobody else wants. I don't know how else to describe it.
Obviously, you know, the Cajun Cannon has nothing but love for Taysom too. And I think that the best way to describe him, we've heard it all along, is just saying he's a football player. There's no position with him. And I'm just curious to know how much more in the receiving game can we see of him. We know he's got that power running ability and always gets that extra yardage kind of deal. But I would just love to see the man utilize more in the receiving game. I just that's one aspect where I don't feel we see enough of him. But, I mean, last year, I think pretty much you called it with Taysom and his usage in this team. And even we're smart enough to take him in fantasy football at the tight end spot.
Yeah, I mean, he's a running back, right? Like, he's just a running back who runs the Wildcat. But if you can start him at tight end, he's worth having. If you have to start him at quarterback, absolutely not. But this quote from Drew says, if all of a sudden you were down an offensive lineman and you just said, Taysom, would you just play guard for like three plays and just hold up against the studded side? I bet you could do it. He'd certainly stick his nose in there and try. And it's like, yeah, that's the beauty of Taysom Hill. Like, there's this fantasy football idiot who just every now and then will show up in my mentions. And I swear I muted him, but he keeps showing up. And he's like, oh, he doesn't do anything that's worthwhile. And I was like, he literally plays special teams. If anyone on your special teams group is also a contributor in any facet of the game, then they are worth keeping around. And the fact that he not only plays every special teams unit, he also comes in and does something on offense that no one else can replicate. It's such a strange conversation because it's like, of course you want that guy on your roster. Like, yes, it's kind of gimmicky, but sure, that's because there's only one of him in the NFL. It's going to be gimmicky because you have to figure it out, but it's like, it's worth having.
Do we have a Taysom one of one fan out there at all? No.
I mean, I think that's every BYU Cougar.
I mean, yeah,
basically the entire like city of Provo.
With Hill, to me, it also said a lot when Brees was still around. He didn't mind at all. And actually was in favor of Hill getting more snaps while at quarterback, which is amazing to hear from a competitor like Drew.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be a really interesting thing to watch develop
with
over
Carr,
the course
right?
of the season, because last year, one of the benefits of going with Andy is you had no qualms about taking him off the field at any point. And it was kind of the beauty and the madness of Andy all in the same kind of, you know, picture of like, okay, yeah, his ceiling is so low that there's no question. But like you would have never taken Drew off the field as often as you took Andy off the field last year. Can you do the same thing with Derek Carr? How much can you do that with Derek Carr before he starts to get really annoyed that, okay, so I just have two downs? Like I go out there and I complete a 6-yard pass on first down. Suddenly I come back on third down and it's third and six because our you know, great Taysom Hill power run lost us 2 yards, right? Like I didn't get that chance on second down. and now we're, you know, we're in third and long, right? And it's like, that would annoy me as a quarterback over time. If it works, you know, everyone kind of feels happy about it. Winning cures everything. But I do think that it's like he can say all the right things. I don't know that it's going to work the same way for him. And I think it's going to make so halfway through the season, we're like, why aren't we seeing Taysom more? Well, it's like, well, you paid this quarterback. This is your starting quarterback now. And I think you're going to kind of revert back to what it was with Drew, which is like Taysom getting 10 touches on offense in a game, not catches, but like carries, which is the majority of it last year, is going to be a lot rarer than it was this past season, would be my guess.
An even bigger question, will we see Derek Carr lined up at all at wide receiver?
I mean, he will be. Just the real question is whether he actually runs a route.
We never got to see that from Drew, sadly.
I highly doubt it. Well, they told Taysom he was not allowed to throw to Drew under any circumstances. But one time he did fake to him and the defense bought it. It was against the Bucks. Anyway. So there's one other comment from Drew that I do want to draw attention to in it. And I think it's actually a really good point of the turnover thing last year. Like, you can look at the defense and say, why isn't the defense forcing turnovers? And there is an element of luck. There's an element of randomness to it. But what Drew pointed out, which I think is very, very accurate, is the offense has a role to play here too, right? Like, if the offense is not forcing the opposing offense to do anything out of its comfort zone because they're not putting up points, then yeah, it's going to be harder to turn teams over, right? Like, if they're not having to do seven-step drops and try to force the ball down the field on third and long, you're not going to have as many opportunities for turnovers, right? Like, yeah, you can punch the ball out and that happens. It didn't happen for the Saints last year, but in a lot of instances, why is that running back fighting for extra yards where you can punch the ball out? It's because they're desperate to get across the goal line like Alvin Kamara was against the 49ers, right? Like, if the Saints are up 10 in that game, he's not trying to fight his way into the end zone, and that turnover doesn't happen, right? And I think the Saints definitely did not put opposing teams in positions where they had to get aggressive and make mistakes. And it's on in part because the offense didn't put up points the way that you'd be grown accustomed to it. Like, I can't, like, there were a couple games that stand out where you're like, yeah, the Saints offense really took control of this game, the Rams game, the Raiders game. But even then, they were not blowouts where the other team had to just completely just say, okay, we're going for it, right? Like, even that Rams game was pretty close. The Raiders game should have been a much bigger blowout than it was. The only reason it was a blowout in the end is because the Raiders didn't score. But it was a 20-0 or something like that, and it should have been worse. I think that's a big part of it. And, like, you can put it on the defense, but the offense has to play complementary football. Like, you know when it's really easy to force a team to make a mistake is when you pin them back to their own goal line, right? That didn't happen that much last year. I don't know. Like, I think that it's a really good point. And when you look back at that season in 2022, one of the biggest struggles was you never felt like the Saints had the better offense in a game. Never. At no point. Even in games they won, I didn't feel like they had the better offense.
No, and I remember thinking that Seattle game, I thought they were going to cruise all over them. And then I remember thinking, holy crap, Geno Smith looks totally different.
But they allowed 42 points in that game?
I was like, what?
Yeah. I mean, Taysom Hill won that game. Like, right, you point to right. The games that the quarterback won, other than, so week one, you give it to Jameis. Week five, you give it to Taysom.
Right.
What other games did the quarterback win that season? It wasn't against the Browns. The quarterback didn't win that game. Taysom Hill won that game. The weather won that game. It wasn't in week 17. Marshawn Lattimore won that game. Right. And Gardner Minshew won that game, right?
Was it the Rams game? I guess Andy had a good game that game, right?
Yeah, but I mean, you also were playing against the backup quarterback for the second half, right?
Yeah, like, totally, right.
Like, the defense won against the Raiders. So, yeah. So like, there was, like, in no games that, but you could point to games that the quarterback lost, right? So, it's just, like, the quarterback position last year was a net negative.
Yeah.
And it needs to be at least neutral. And if you want to be a playoff contender, like, net positive. And I think if that is the case, the turnovers will come. You will get back to kind of, I think it will regress to the mean. But I just think it's a good point. Like, you can look at the defense and say the defense is doing something wrong. In reality, I think it's a combination of a lot of different things. One of them being lackluster offense, not putting any pressure on opposing offenses.
And of course, we saw that, you know, if it was something was going to go wrong last season, it definitely did for this team. And I think the turnovers was another one. As far as even getting the takeaways, a ball gets knocked out, the other team's able to fall on top of it, or even like a tip ball miraculously falls down where nobody else is on the field for the Saints. They just had terrible luck all around kind of deal.
See, I don't even know if that happened that often, to be completely honest. Like, I don't recall a ton of instances where it's just like, man, that should have been a turnover. Like, you weren't even getting those.
I was one maybe really good example kind of thing.
The one really good example is against the 49ers where Tyrann Mathieu gets his whole palm on a ball and ends up tipping it up, and then it ends up falling into Juwan Jennings' arms for a touchdown for the 49ers. Like, that's a good example of, like, man, this is just – or, like, Alante Taylor getting, like, back-to-back interceptions overturned on reviews.
And, right.
Actually, I'm sorry. One of them was a really, really soft penalty on Chris Harris.
To me, the whole turnover issue, a lot went into the snake bit, quote unquote, whole feel of last season too.
Wait, you know what's funny? It's like we talk about in the preseason, like Paulson Adebo is constantly getting his hand on balls, but he's never picking them off. And it's like, you know, that's kind of a weird thing to complain about when it's like, yeah, but he's knocking the ball down. That's a good thing, right? Like, that should be priority number one. And then the turnovers come. The problem is the turnovers never came. And it, like, that's what changes games. And I don't know, like, I do think that Alante Taylor has better ball skills. And I think if there is one focal point of that position battle that I think, like, will tilt, whether it's Alante or Paulson, it's going to be Alante just kind of having a nose for interceptions and setting them up and picking them off in ways that Paulson just doesn't seem to handle. And, like, either way, they're both going to be very important players on this roster. So it's not really going to, it's not really like one wins and one loses, right? I do think whoever loses that ends up playing the slot, because you kind of need somebody to play the slot and you want to get them on the ball, both on the field.
I mean, if you, obviously people don't remember, we didn't have Marshawn for most of the year, unfortunately. And yeah, Alante got that, you know, birth by fire, trial by fly fire, whatever you want to say right there. And for the most part, you know, obviously rookie's going to have his struggles, but I thought, you know, solid year all season and really did outperform Paulson, who was dealing with, was it knee or ankle himself?
I can't remember exactly what he was dealing with, but he did have an injury in the preseason that I think did make it a little more difficult for him to kind of ramp it, because it's year two for him. It wasn't like he was coming into like year four where he's like set on everything. He wasn't even like a sure starter in his rookie season. He ended up playing all 17 games. He was one of the, I think he was the only player to play all 17 games, and that was a COVID year. Like, he didn't even get hit the week that everyone got hit in against the Dolphins. So yeah, I mean, like, maybe that just did not, the season didn't translate the way you'd want it. I don't think he was bad. He has a tendency over his first two seasons to be very solid and then completely break down in the worst possible moments, right? If you go back to that Falcons game the Saints lost in the Superdome two seasons ago, he was the one guarding Cordarrelle Patterson on that last play where you thought the Saints had won and all of a sudden the Falcons are kicking a field goal to go win that game. Like, he's the one who was guarding Cordarrelle Patterson. Should your rookie have even been on the field at that point? Probably not. But the fact is, he let it up, right? He was the guy guarding Mike Evans on that pass interference at the goal line where it's like, why was he one-on-one with Mike Evans? I don't know, but he still did not get the job done. And those plays can't happen. Those plays change a game. I think he's always been a little handsier than you want him to be. And that's just a young defensive back thing. You get away with stuff in college that you don't get away with in the NFL. So I don't know. Maybe he'll show up and he'll be a much more well-rounded cornerback this time than he was last year. But I think that just the kind of swagger that Alante plays with is going to be tough to beat in that position battle, I think.
You mentioned with Adebo too, and obviously he was like training camp superstar last season. And you got to wonder, was it because he's so handsy and was able to get away with it without the refs around kind of thing.
It's definitely part of it, right? Like, you get away with stuff in camp that you're not going to get away with in the game. It's a factor, right? Like, yeah, you look really good in camp when no one's calling the jersey tugs, and then all of a sudden they get called. You're like, well, I can't do that, so how do I hold up now? So yeah, I think that's part of it. Another part of it is just like understanding leverage and how to set up like certain plays and how to set up interceptions. And some players are really good at it. Some players aren't. CJ was always really good at that. Now, was CJ the best in coverage? No, he wasn't. But he was physical and he could set up interceptions. Like, if you go back to that game against the Bucks 2 years ago where he just set up Scotty Miller, like just baited him and then just like hit the Jets and just boom, just clean interception. I think that was the play before Tom smashed a tablet. Like that you just didn't have that last year. And you need someone who's going to be doing that. Like, you need a ball hawk. Didn't have one.
Yeah, somebody definitely needs to step up and start taking that ball away. I mean, we had, what's his name? The guy from Kansas City ended up getting two picks.
Daniel Sorensen. Well, I've been tooting the Tyrann Mathieu wasn't that bad last year horn since before it was cool. And, you know, I had someone be like, oh, yeah, we just need to intercept the ball more. I'm like, he had three interceptions. He's led the team.
Yeah.
Like, three interceptions in a season for a safety is a reasonable amount of interceptions. Like, he did not underperform.
There's at least two, I think, he dropped, too. So
sure, but, like, he also intercepted three passes.
Right, no, I'm saying he could even have more kind of deal.
Yeah, and so he had five in 2015. He had four in 2019. He had six in 2020. He's had three each of the past two seasons. So, I mean, three is a reasonable number. It's not zero, right? Like, the problem is how many people had zero or one. You know, like, if four or five players had multiple interceptions, suddenly that's a reasonable number of turnovers. But you can't expect it all from one guy. And they just got it from nobody. Nobody. Except for Daniel Sorensen. And that one that bounced into Bradley Roby's arms.
And then the one that Marshawn got, that was at the end of the year against Philly. I mean, unfortunately, yeah, we just didn't see him all of last year.
Yeah, I think, honestly, it's like we can talk about interceptions, too. I think the forced fumbles is the real part of the equation that was like that should happen. Like, just from luck alone, like, you might play quarterbacks and they don't put the ball in danger, but, like, geez, guys, punch the ball. Are you just not doing the drills right? Like, what's going on? That you can't punch these balls out. You can watch, like, the Peanut Tillman punch constantly, and it's like, why don't the Saints ever do that?
That's why I felt like the bad luck happened. I remember DeMario, Pete Werner, Caden Ellis knocking the ball out. And then it seemed like the other team was like, oh, they happen to be right there and fall on it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But all right, let's wrap up this episode. We're going to get ready to go out to OTAs tomorrow. I think we'll have another episode posting on Thursday. We'll gather all the sound from Tuesday and then record on Wednesday. And you guys will get it on Thursday morning. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. I've been trying to go for runs at like the hottest part of the day to like train myself. It's like I call it the Ogeron. That's what he used to do.
Hey, man, only training the body can get you ready for training camp, and those brutal conditions can't be a bad thing. I'll just have my wet towel over my head.
Yeah, I need to go get – I always go buy a new wet towel. I don't think I'm going to do that for the one day of practice, but it's like you're just kind of ramping up. So sweat maintenance. But all right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks to Drew and Dr. David Chow. That's Drew Brees for chatting with us over the last couple of weeks. So we give you that. And hit me up on Twitter at Jeff_Nowak. Let me know if you're looking to hear from anyone specifically at OTAs over the next several weeks. Doesn't have to be tomorrow. We have 3 weeks of these practices. Hit Steve Geller up at Steve Geller WWL. You can listen to him on Sports Talk Monday through Friday now, starting at 5:30 to 8 p.m. It's good stuff. Where we got that Drew Brees interview.
Yeah, yeah. There's no more breaks where we're getting interrupted by any coaches' shows or baseball games.
Not for a little while. But all right. Thanks for listening, y'all. Peace.
Talk to you soon. Who dat?